Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
So before we talk about Labor Day, labor exploitation in New York, I should say, just in time for Labor Day, I want to invite you to participate in a little experiment we'll be doing 1 hour from now, just after we go off the air today, because on Labor Day, we, like many of you, will be off work. So we'll be running mostly a best-of show with some highlights of recent segments. But we also thought we'd record something today for use on Monday about what you, our listeners, are up to on Labor Day weekend, on Labor Day in particular, and how, if any other Brian Lehrer Show listener happens to come across you, they will recognize you. So think about this, and we're going to do a call-in off the air in 1 hour on the question, what are you doing on Labor Day, and how will we know you if we see you? Okay, so think about that, and we want you to call in with the answers to that a little bit after noon, just coming up right in an hour. So we'll put that on the shelf for the moment, but think about what are you doing on Labor Day, and how will we know you if we see you for a 12 noon off-the-air call-in today, okay? And, of course, Labor Day is just around the corner, and yesterday researchers released a new important study that exposes rampant exploitation, even wage theft, of low-wage workers in New York City, as well as Chicago and Los Angeles. Researchers from the Center for Urban Economic Development, the National Employment Law Project, and the UCLA Institute for Research on Labor and Employment all participated in this. They surveyed more than 4,300 people working in factories, grocery stores, construction sites, retail shops, and private homes. And their findings reveal that workers are routinely paid below minimum wage. They're being forced to work while sick in a surprising number of cases. They have their tips stolen by the employers. They're not being compensated for overtime. So let's find out what's in this study. Joining me now, one of the three principal authors of the new report, Annetta Bernhardt. She's policy co-director of the National Employment Law Project. Also joining me to take your phone calls with some of your own questions if you're in any of these situations is Amy Carroll, supervising attorney at Make the Road New York, an organization that, among other things, provides legal services to low-income New Yorkers. So, Annetta and Amy, thanks very much for coming into our studios. Welcome to WNYC.
Thanks for having us.
And first off, Annetta, who are we talking about? Who did you survey for this study?
We surveyed, like you said, more than 4,000 workers who worked in low-wage industries. And like you said, the industries run the gamut of the urban economy in the three cities. It's all types of workers, you know, people who are born in the U.S., immigrants. It's really across the board in terms of the demographics. What we found is that the types of violations that you talked about are really widespread and prevalent. This is not just a few rogue employers. This is not just a few businesses at the periphery of the economy. It's really across the board in every single industry we looked at. And I would say, you know, on Labor Day, this is a pretty grim report. Our employment and labor laws are really not working for these workers.
And let's go through some of these different categories. And probably many of our listeners are surprised to hear some of these categories, like being forced to work when you're sick. But, Amy, you told us off the air about a couple of examples of cases you've worked on. You collaborated with the New York State Attorney General's office on an investigation into a couple of supermarkets. Tell us about that.
Sure. I mean, the report really reflects what our workers are seeing. Make the Road New York is a community-based organization made up of nearly 7,000 low-income New Yorkers, and our members see all these problems. So we have folks working in grocery stores doing the bagging of the groceries, and they're actually working just for tips. The grocery stores schedule them and require them to show up to bag the groceries, but the stores weren't, in fact, paying the workers anything. So that was the case with the Attorney General's office. We also see...
You mean they're not... it's not legal to hire somebody to work just for tips?
No, it's not. The employer has to pay a base wage. It's also really rampant in a lot of the green grocers you have around the city. We have members who are working 12-hour days, 5, 6, 7 days a week for a flat weekly wage with no overtime. And, you know, it's just really basically every pocket of the city has these kind of violations. It's really shocking.
And another case involved pizza delivery workers in the Bronx. What was going on there?
So delivery workers are also I think I probably haven't met a delivery worker who's paid appropriately. Oftentimes, they're working incredibly long shifts for a flat shift pay of, say, $10, $15 a shift, working, again, 12 hours a day, 6 days a week. And in this particular case, there was a pretty creative yet definitely illegal scheme where the restaurant actually made the delivery worker front the money for the delivery, take the delivery out to the customer, and then keep the money from the customer. And it's a piece of, I think businesses are really shifting risk onto their workers. So in that case, they're having to front the money. The workers had to provide their own bicycles and repair the bicycles. I mean, it's just really rampant throughout the city.
So listeners, these findings will be shocking to some who get to work above these kinds of pay grades, but probably not that shocking to many of you who work in low-wage industries. So if this sounds familiar to you, if you have a story, or if you need help with negotiating one of these situations, call up. We do have labor attorney Amy Carroll here, who will give you what advice she can with what to do if you're being exploited by your employer. Give us a call, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, or you can post a comment or a question to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. Anyone may call, but we definitely will give some priority to anyone who feels you're in a low-wage and exploitation situation with your job right now and want to know what you can do about it. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692 for Amy Carroll from Make the Road New York and Annetta Bernhardt, policy co-director of the National Employment Law Project, one of the three groups that released the study of low-wage exploitation in New York, Chicago, and L.A. And Annetta, you'll be releasing the city-specific numbers in the coming months, I gather. But based on your knowledge of New York City, is there anything specific to the way the workers are being exploited here?
You know, it's a great question, and it's something we've been getting a lot, sort of like which city is the worst. And I have to tell you, I don't think any of the cities is the worst. I mean, they certainly differ in the types of industries they have. But I'm actually struck by how consistent the findings are across the three cities. You know, if you look at the restaurant industry, you're seeing exactly the same kinds of strategies, the grocery store industry, for janitors. And what that's saying is that what we're tapping here is business strategy. Right? We're not just tapping, you know, haphazard decisions by a single employer. The fact that it's so consistent across the cities means there's a real warning bell here.
And one of the patterns that you found was widespread employer intimidation. Give me some examples.
You know, the intimidation tactics run the gamut. The most obvious one is, you know, when workers complain, the employer fired them. Threatened to call immigration or even called immigration. Some employers cut workers' wages, dock their wages. They cut their hours, which is especially punitive right now during the recession when workers are desperate for hours. You know, one of the hardest findings for us was we saw such prevalent violations. You know, more than two-thirds of our sample in the previous week had a violation, but only one in five actually made a complaint in the previous year or tried to organize a union. When they complained, more than half were retaliated against. But the rest of the folks that we talked to, we asked, why didn't you complain? And they said, I'm scared of being retaliated against. And as we show, with good reason.
Your stat here among these over 4,000 workers who were surveyed, 43%. Sorry, one in five workers reported having lodged a complaint about wages to their employer or tried to form a union. 43% of those people said they experienced some form of illegal retaliation, firing or suspension or something right. else. So, Amy, how do you avoid this kind of retaliation? What do you say to workers who are afraid of being fired, especially in this economy, when many may see it as too risky?
It's really a tricky problem because, as Annetta said, if you're in a low-wage job, every day at work matters, and a day without work can be really crushing for your family. What we find is oftentimes workers wait until they've left a job to actually do something. But one of the interesting things that I think can get downplayed in these kind of conversations is these workers actually have a lot of power. So we've had a lot of examples where workers themselves, we support them, they go back to the boss and say, you owe me this amount of money. For example, there was a a bagel shop in Queens where a woman came to us. She was drastically underpaid. We helped her out. She went back. She got the money she was owed, and also we helped her negotiate an agreement with the boss that he would give raises to the current workers and post a notice that he had signed in Spanish in the bagel shop. So I think there are all these sort of small stories out there of workers actually standing up and enforcing their own rights that often go unnoticed.
Let's take a call. And our lines filled up immediately when we put out the number. Fanny in Bensonhurst, you're on WNYC. Hi, Fanny.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you.
What I want to say, I'm a chef, and I work in a restaurant, and people expect you to go to work when you're sick. And people have been conditioned in that industry that regardless of how you feel, you have to go in, because if you don't do your job, someone else has to do it for you. And when you go back to work, you actually get attitude from your fellow workers because you did not come in, regardless of how you felt. And it's expected that regardless if you're contagious or ill, they just, you need to be there.
Is this a kind of macho in a way?
Well, I guess so.
I'm going to work through the pain?
Or is it just... You have to work through the pain. It doesn't matter.
Because you're saying it comes through from your colleagues, not just from the boss. Do I understand that correctly?
Both, yes.
Annetta?
Yeah, I just wanted to say, you know, this was probably one of the most striking findings in the study, that of the workers who were injured on the job in our survey, only 8% in the end ended up getting workers' compensation insurance. And a lot of people ask us, you know, how does that happen? And it's precisely because of what your caller is talking about. Although we think a lot of this is actually coming from employers. Employers are saying, if you're injured, you can't, and you're going to be out of work, tough, I'm going to fire you. They're explicitly saying, don't file for workers' compensation. You know, if you have a bleeding cut, here's some money, go to the emergency room. They're doing everything they can to divert workers away from the workers' compensation system, which actually should be helping out injured workers on the job.
Sean in Astoria, you're on WNYC. Hi, Sean.
Hi. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Thank you.
I moved to New York in January, and I'm currently living in Astoria. And I applied for a job as a busboy in a restaurant. I'm a college graduate. They had told me that I would be getting $40 per shift as a busboy plus 10% of whatever the housemaid. I was never told how long a shift would go. In fact, we were told that there was no limit to shifts. Shifts would start, there was a shift that would start at 9 a.m. and would end at 5 p.m., and there was also a shift that would start at 5 p.m. and would end at about 4 a.m. or 5 a.m. And so I was leaving the restaurant at, you know, with $80 in my pocket max, and suddenly I realized, you know, I couldn't pay rent. I couldn't live off of this wage, so I filed for unemployment. I quit my job. I filed for unemployment against the employer. And as soon as I filed for unemployment, they had actually taken away my records from the computer. So there was no record of me working, and I was suddenly left, you know, hanging.
Sean,
totally unemployed.
It's a terrible story. Tell us more about how you wind up with under $4 an hour, working 12 to 14 hours. I'm not sure I get how that happened. Because technically you're being paid at least the minimum wage, right? Which is a lot more than that.
Right. Well, because, you know, I guess there's a stipulation where if you are making tips, the employer is supposed to give you like $4.30 or something like that. The economy was just so bad, I guess, that there was – I'm also an actor, too, and that was kind of my first – line of work to go straight for the restaurant. I also didn't realize until I had looked into it that what they were actually doing was against the law.
So, Annetta, you've got that nod of familiarity on your face right now.
Yeah, and it's really about, you know, one of the ways this happens is that employers use these different pay arrangements to sort of disguise the fact that there are violations. You know, in the restaurant industry, there's a common sort of rate. We'll give you $300 flat per week. And, you know, you work anywhere from $35 to $60 an hour, and the amount doesn't change depending on how much you work. If you're working 60 hours, you do the calculation, you're earning less than the minimum wage, you're not getting overtime. overtime, but it's really obscured because of the way that the pay arrangement is set up. And there's lots of variations on that. You know, people are paid by the day, they're paid by the piece, they're paid by the job. So that's part of the issue here in terms of even workers knowing, you know, are they getting robbed or not?
So Amy from Make the Road, Sean quit that job, but what about for other people who may be in that same situation? Is there anything they can do to make their wage actually come up to at least the minimum wage?
Sure. So right now in New York State, the minimum wage is $7.25 an hour. If you're earning tips, the employer is allowed to pay you a little bit less than that. It depends on the type of job you do, but say $4.65 an hour or $4.90 probably if you're a busboy. So, you know, but Annette is right. Employers pay you a daily rate or a weekly rate, so it can be hard to figure out if there's a violation. I mean, I would suggest that folks file with the Department of Labor to claim their wages. You can file not disclosing your name, so it will, you know, if you're still in the job, the Department of Labor will come in and look at all the workers, not just at your complaint, and really try to do an employer-wide investigation and audit.
Amy Carroll, supervising attorney at Make the Road New York. Annetta Bernhardt, the policy co-director of the National Employment Law Project. If you're just joining us, the National Employment Law Project, along with two other groups, has just released a new study that exposes rampant exploitation and wage theft of low-wage workers in New York City, as well as Chicago and Los Angeles, in areas like factory work, grocery stores, construction sites, retail shops, private homes, and Carlos in the Bronx here on WNYC. Hi, Carlos.
Hi, Brian. Okay, basically, I identify with everything that as it's been said in the program. I'm an immigrant from the Dominican Republic. I am college educated, and I was paid way above the minimum payment rate. But this exploitation and intimidation is prevalent not only in those businesses that were mentioned. I used to work for a communication company, and given my status, even I was paid above the minimum wages. I was paid way, way below of the category for the job that I was performing. I was pressured immensely, and when I complained, they even make me work days after I was released from the hospital with a back pain. I wasn't offered a medical plan, even when the company has one. Also, I was denied promotion, and instead, when I complained, I was assigned a supervisor with non-experience whatsoever in technical fields.
Carlos, how much did your immigration status have to do with all this?
I think it has to do a lot with it. Even when you are a legal resident of the United States, I was in the process of renewal, and immediately they noticed that they start requiring information about immigration.
So, Annetta, 70% of the workers you surveyed were immigrants, I gather. About 40% of those were illegal immigrants. So that's a high percentage of illegal immigrants in your survey of workers in these three cities. Amy, what can you say to Carlos in terms of advice for pursuing his rights?
Carlos, I think you touch on a couple points. I mean, it sounds like some of what happened to you may not be technically illegal, but is definitely unfair. I mean, we see lots of workplace abuse. Even if it's not technically illegal, it definitely makes your life harder, you know, and it sounds like that's what happened in your situation. I mean, if you're still interested in talking to somebody about it, and, you know, all the listeners should know this, there's a website, lawhelp.org, that lists, you go in, you put in your zip code, and it will pull up a list of the programs in your area that you can call to get more advice about your specific situation.
Usman in Crown Heights, you're on WNYC. Hello, Usman.
Hi, Brian. Okay, I was a lead plaintiff in a case, and I had help from the National Employment Law Project. Kathy Ruckelhaus was my case officer, if
okay.
I may.
Annette is smiling to have her group acknowledge like that. So what was your case? What kind of work did you do?
Okay, when I came here, I was completely illegal, and they hired us to bag and deliver groceries in supermarkets, Christie's and Food Emporium. In my case, so they said they would pay me $200 a week. I never got that. and then they say 120, I never got that. $90 a week for 12 hours. 12 hours, 7 days a week. And that money, I got it every other week. Once I get mad and I call the lady, she say, oh, why do you need all this money for? $90. So that's how I get in contact with the National Employment Law Project.
How did the case wind up? Did you win?
Oh, yeah. They did settle. They did settle. Christidis, Charlie Bauer, and Food Emporium, they did settle.
They settled. And you got your money?
Yeah, we got the money. It was a class action, anyway. It became a class action.
Yes. Usman, thank you. And here he was acknowledging he was out of legal status at that time, even as an immigrant, and was able to use the system to go to court in the United States and win his back wages, Annetta.
Right, and that's the great thing. I mean, that's one of the things people don't realize is that the one of the good pieces of the story here is that a lot of our basic laws actually do cover workers regardless of their status. The problem is it's hard to assert them when you don't have papers in the workplace. I just wanted to give a quick stat that we have because of the lost wages that he talked about. We estimate in our survey that on average people who have these violations are losing about $2,600 a year to wage theft, and that's out of 17,000 in total earnings. They're already making below the poverty line. This is really criminal theft of people who are already right on the edge of being poor. So there's real impact here in terms of the lost earnings.
Before we run out of time, I want to take a call from Ann in Westport, who thinks employers are not getting a fair shake in this conversation. Ann, thanks for calling.
Yes, I have been both an employee and an employer for I was thrust into the role of employer when my mother developed Alzheimer's disease and I needed to hire caregivers for her. But she was somebody who was just mildly losing her memory and required no more than, when I did the care for her, she required no more than 3 to 4 hours a day. I had part-time caregivers. When I found a good one, it took 5 hours a day. at times I had people who were living in and getting room and board. And quite a number of the employees were engaged in wage theft. They would regularly not do what they were supposed to do, let my mother live in shocking conditions when I wasn't there to check up on them. And they would complain that they were working, 12 to 14-hour days and should be being paid more, but obviously that was untrue because I had done it myself and had people who also carried out the job for, 2-3 years and never needed more than 5 hours a day. So I think it's important. Sometimes the complaints of employees may be perception, and sometimes they may be manipulation. And of course, there are honest situations where employees are being taken advantage of. But I think it's important that all employers who are honest and good not be thrown into a wastebasket of exploitation, and that not every complaint of exploitation is accurate.
Annetta?
Yeah, I mean, just a couple of things. One, it's absolutely the case, that not all employers are bad, and we actually have evidence in our survey of employers who are trying to do the right thing and who invest in their workers, and who provide health insurance and try to pay living wages. I think the problem is that right now public policy isn't doing enough to get more employers to follow that path. We have weak enforcement, weak laws, weak penalties, and our survey shows, I think, systematically there's way too many employers who aren't doing the right thing. And I just want to say, we did not ask workers' perceptions. We gathered hard data, and we ourselves calculated whether or not there were violations.
But, Ann, thank you very much for your call. We're almost out of time. Here's one for you, Amy, as a lawyer for Make the Road. From our comments page, somebody wrote this up. From Manhattan, a friend worked 12-hour days all summer for the Circle Line, never receiving any overtime. The company claimed it doesn't have to pay overtime because it operates on the Hudson, not in New York City. Have you ever heard that before? Would that be a legal distinction, not having to pay New York City wages because the ships actually operate on the Hudson?
You know, there's actually special rules that apply to cruise ships, and I have to say I'm not a cruise ship expert, but I would encourage that person to call the Department of Labor and tell them the story and get some expert advice.
Right. And again, as with anybody who calls in, you know, we don't know that Circle Line was doing this, but this is a claim that's mm-hmm. being made by one of our listeners. So what's next? What are you advocating for on a policy or enforcement level? Is it something that city government should be responsible for policing, Amy? Should we be holding the mayor and mayoral candidates? And we have public advocate candidate and former mayoral candidate Mark Green standing by to come on next. But should they be held accountable for allowing this kind of exploitation?
I think there are many pieces to it. I think government needs to be doing strategic, aggressive enforcement efforts, really looking at the industries where they know violations are occurring and not waiting for workers to come to them to make complaints because many workers are too scared to do so. I also think community groups like Make the Road New York, with our base in the community, play a key role educating workers about their rights and supporting them when they go out to enforce their rights themselves. And it's great to have this kind of research that NELP and others have done to really give hard data behind what we've been seeing.
Amy Carroll, supervising attorney at Make the Road. Annetta Bernhard, policy co-director at the National Employment Law Project, one of three organizations that conducted the survey of thousands of workers and found wage theft and other kind of exploitation of low-income workers in New York City, Chicago, and Los Angeles. Thank you both very much.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And yes, indeed, it's Mark Green next as we continue our series of interviews with the candidates for public advocate in New York City. He wants his old job back. Stay with us.